Hey everybody, thanks for joining us today. We're just going to hang tight for a minute and let everybody get connected while you get set up for our webinar today, and then we will get started. So just hang tight for a moment and we'll be kicking this off very soon. All right, let's get started. Thanks for joining us today. For those of you who don't know who I am, my name is Mike Gibb. I run AccountsRecovery.net, and I'm excited to be moderating today's webinar on leveraging technology to enhance productivity. One of the great lessons that's been learned during the coronavirus pandemic is the importance and reliance on technology. Companies across the credit collection industry have come to see the benefits that technology offers, especially as it pertains to helping maximize the productivity of their agents. Today, thanks to the sponsorship of Prodigal, we've got a panel of experts with us who are going to share their perspectives about how they are using technology to make employees and their operations as productive as possible. Before I introduce the panel, let me say a few words about AccountsRecovery.net. AccountsRecovery.net is a news and information platform for the ARM industry. The site publishes unique and curated content, maintains a number of email newsletters, hosts webinars like this one, offers a number of exciting podcasts, and manages a Slack channel for the ARM industry. The site is free for anyone in the industry to use and is a great resource of news and insights to help educate and inform. I hope you'll all spend a few minutes every day checking out what it's got to offer. Now, let me tell you a little bit about today's speakers. Shantanu Gangal is the CEO of Prodigal. Prodigal improves compliance and boosts revenues by running artificial intelligence models on the richest source of data, your phone, text, email, and email communications to customers. Each month, Prodigal analyzes nearly 5 million borrower interactions to find insights that increase productivity and drive liquidation. Prodigal is backed by Y Combinator and other leading venture investors from the Bay Area. Prior to founding Prodigal, Shantanu was the head of data science at Fundbox, a small business lender. At Fundbox, he leveraged machine learning to build actionable and powerful collection strategies. Also with us today is Mike Hiller, who is what many would call a transformational leader. The qualities of encouraging innovation and change is what you witness once inside the office. If you ask him, he says he's a workaholic, and a work in progress servant leadership archetype over all else. With more than a decade of experience in operations and executive management roles, he joined American Profit Recovery in 2005 and has served as vice president of collections for the company since 2012. Mike is a licensed collection manager in Michigan. I served as a subject matter expert for the Michigan Department of Licensing and Regulatory Affairs and was recently appointed by Governor Whitmer. Whitmer is currently serving a four-year term on the Michigan Board of Collection Professionals. Greg Schubert is the president and CEO of Sequium Asset Solutions. He's been in the collection business for 37 years and spent 10 years in senior leadership positions with Nationwide Credit. Prior to founding Sequium in 2017, he was founder and CEO of Focus Receivables Management. Sequium has about 500 total employees, and the company services the telecom, financial services, and BPO sectors with three branches in Atlanta, Montego Bay, and Monterrey, Mexico. Sequium focuses on machine learning, data science, and business optimization to improve productivity and performance for its customers. The format for today's webinar will be a panel discussion. We encourage everybody to submit questions and we'll get to them as the discussion is ongoing. To submit a question, please either enter it into the Q&A box on your Zoom webinar control panel or send it in through the chat module. This event is being recorded and recording will be made available in the coming days on AccountsRecovery.net. Let's start our discussion, gentlemen. Thanks for joining me today. Greg, Mike, let's start with a fairly broad question to sort of triangulate where everybody is. Let's talk about what percentage of your employees are still working remotely and how do you anticipate that trend progressing through the rest of the year? Mike, alphabetically, you come first, so we'll let you kick it off.
Yeah, thanks, Mike. The short answer is 100%. You know, that doesn't mean we're not going to the office, picking up mail and setting up our new workstations, because we basically sent everyone home with their towers and their monitors. When the Michigan shelter in place came down, you mentioned Whitmer, and she had a pretty robust plan right out of the gate. So we sent everyone home, and we're setting up new workstations to have both at home and office capabilities. But as you see in Michigan, it's still kind of, if you can work from home, then you should. So the normative statement, you know, from our powers that be here in the States. But we do anticipate that a crew of volunteers are going to go back to the office at some point here in the next month or two, possibly work every other day, and then, you know, deep clean on the off days, certainly before the year is out.
Well, this is Greg Schuber. Thanks for having me. We are about 95% across the entire spectrum work from home. We do have certain management and imperative positions that are coming into the office. We'll talk about this a little bit as we are expanding the business and bringing new people in. There are requirements that a lot of that training is done on site, utilizing social distancing requirements and some of the PPE and the other items like temperature checking and increasing the call center environment with plexiglass extensions across the board. So we've done fairly well in the last 90 days since this pandemic has hit. Very pleased with the productivity to date with the majority of our folks working from home. And my anticipation or expectation is that this is probably going to continue throughout the rest of this year.
So Greg, you mentioned training. You guys are interviewing, hiring, training from the office, and then once they're kind of up to speed, they're at home? Or what does that time frame kind of look like for you guys?
Well, it's, you know, most of the interviewing processes are taking place utilizing Zoom. We do have a 3-week training program, and reps are expected to be trained on site. And again, exercising all the social distancing requirements because we have plenty of space in order to do it. And we're taking a lot of precautions. But I think what has to happen is we can't just set folks with three weeks experience to work from home, because they don't have the development in place yet that they need to be to have that level of independence. So you create scorecard methodologies where individuals that are in training can earn their way basically to work from home. So it reduces and minimizes the risk for the company.
Yeah, that makes sense. That's helpful for me. I appreciate it.
Thanks, gentlemen. Appreciate the information to start. Chauncey, let's bring you into the equation, and maybe you can share some of the things you've seen so far from maybe your clients, and start to talk a little bit about how technology is reshaping some of those companies.
Absolutely. So, thanks for having me here, Mike. So the pandemic itself kind of has seen people react to it in phases. Mid-March to like mid-April, we saw a lot of our clients either moving very swiftly back home or kind of pausing for a week or so in their operations, and that reflected in the overall activity that was going on. This was obviously compounded by the fact that there was a lot of regulatory uncertainty. Different states were kind of coming in and saying different things. And so even if you actually had the ability to kind of conduct operations, people were like dipping their toes very, very cautiously. So both of those factors meant that till middle of April, we saw a little bit of a step back across the board. But really, I mean, and again, I would love to hear Mike and Greg's opinion. I think since the mid-April, late April, the last 60 odd days, things have, at least productivity levels wise, we've seen some of the best performers come back in full force, in a sense that they are kind of, the agents are just as productive. The total collections are, if not back to the highs, near the highs. It's like the stock market, frankly. it went dead for a while, but I think it came back really strong, and particularly the best performers.
Yeah, I can tell you from just anecdotally, our office, we're not performing as well. We're performing much better. and I can tell you some of the agencies here in Michigan and in the Midwest, you know, that we kind of have best practice segments with are hot and cold. Just like you're saying, Shantanu, it's, you know, there's some agencies that were furloughed for a while and, you know, on the PPP train and just trying to kind of keep their head above water. And there's agencies that were able to get home quickly. As I said, we just kind of sent people home with with all of the hardware and figured it out in a few days' time. So we were very fortunate to be able to do that. And then once we got home, nobody missed a beat. You know, we've had a lot of success recently. And I don't know if it's a shock so much as, you know, the whole work from home really wasn't even on the table. It wasn't part of our discussions. And then when it was kind of our hand was forced, it all worked out very well. So we were very pleased. But I kind of wonder, though, because, you know, as much as our industry helps one another, and I think we're kind of unique with that regard, you know, there's always someone that's willing to put on a webinar and accept Mike's invitation and give everyone else some advice, even though we're in competition. But I do kind of wonder if, you know, these aren't, you know, kind of two sides of the pendulum, where because some companies were kind of struggling, the rest of us are getting more contacts with consumers who no doubt have more than just one debt in collections. But I'd like everyone's opinion on that as well.
Well, I'll tell you what, we probably saw somewhere between 10 to 15% immediate increase in utilization and productive time. And if you think about it, it makes sense, right? There's nowhere to go on your break when you're working from home. You're not having the issues with some levels of tardiness because of the commute. You're not having the same level of meetings and wasting time issues and things of that sort. So productivity increased really nicely. At the same time, we've also had a windfall in our organization, in our industry, due to stimulus expansion, unemployment benefits and things of that sort. So we've had that windfall, but let's not move that away from the actual productivity. The productivity of the amount of calls, the time we're spending on calls, wrap time is lower. We're seeing better overall KPI statistics. Now, I would say probably after doing this 3 months, we're starting to see some of the cracks that take place in productivity, where reps start maybe taking advantage of that independence with some tardiness and absenteeism and things of that sort. And I think where we're going with this is down the road. I think work from home is here to stay, and that there will be some sort of a hybrid situation in the future where reps can earn 2 or 3 days or 4 days of work from home and have more flexible schedules as long as we're meeting our productivity requirements. And I think it'll be beneficial to the industry. The piece out there that we have to deal with, of course, is security. And, you know, security is relatively easy when, you know, if you're just working off an internet-based system. It's even better if you have a cloud environment that gives you better protection in different areas. But where you might run into some difficulty is the amount of VPN access that's taking place when you need access to customer systems access and different things of that sort. And so you've got to be very careful there that your firewall and those processes of security are in place and tested and working well.
A couple things you mentioned there, Greg, I'd like to pick up on. So, you mentioned, you know, maybe 10 to 15% increase in productivity. We've seen a similar increase in what we term as inbound calls. So right around 17% more inbound, which I think speaks to some of the elements that you were talking about kind of socially as well. But outside of that, we've seen in performance increases also. I will say that, you know, we offer for most of the staff, at least the collection staff, overtime opportunities. And although those have decreased, you know, they're working fewer hours, kind of aggregate of hours. The productivity inside of the hours that are being worked have gone up, though. So we're getting more performance in a shorter period of time.
So we actually ran a survey with Mike and Accounts Recovery that asked a lot of these questions to agencies, and very, very rightly kind of reflect what you're saying. So agent productivity is a top concern, but so is kind of IT and security as kind of agents move remote. The interesting thing is, like, we did see like a very, very strong bimodal distribution. People either did really well, and I think that's what is reflected in you guys, or there's some agencies who couldn't adapt quickly or did not have the ability to kind of get VPN set up. All of the systems were in a server in a basement, and that just meant that they had to go dark for an extended period of time, or even after they came back, either the telephony and stuff like that didn't really support the same kind of volumes, or if they did, one thing we noticed is like speech analytics has kind of made a bigger comeback in that light, where agencies who haven't had speech analytics very strongly correlated to those decreasing in agent productivity. While almost 40% of agencies who are using speech analytics reported actually an increase in productivity as well. But definitely see like this bimodal thing in terms of like what you're thinking about in what do you see in productivity? How does that compare to, how does that compare amongst like the top flight guys versus like the rest?
Yeah, that's interesting, and I can speak for us. We you know, from a technology readiness perspective, we had no idea how prepared we actually were until we had to flip that switch. So it's kind of luck of the draw. But I can say that our employees, just kind of from a their response perspective, have been really grateful and appreciative. Yeah. And I think that goes a long way. You know, they've been receptive to the work from home, and certainly many have said they feel safer. And I think we'd be remiss to ignore that probably has something to do with the productivity aspect as well. And the fact that they're not part of the 20% unemployment in Michigan too, it might have something to do with it.
Yeah, I've got to tell you, Mike, I was really, really surprised how easy and how quickly we were able to do this. So the next time anybody asks you about, did you test your disaster recovery plan?
That's right.
You certainly have a few pages of positive reinforcement. But what brings us up to this whole work from home thing and productivity and utilization and compliance and things of that sort is, I think, probably because it's out of sight, out of mind with the reps not being here, that the focus on the KPIs, there's more time to do it. And I think that's helpful. In the long term, if you're going to have large numbers of folks working from home, you almost have to have a speech analytics process in place in order to ensure that your compliance necessities are being taken care of, because other than having to listen to every call from work from home, I just don't know how you'd be able to do it in the long term without getting yourself in significant hot water.
Yeah, I think that's right.
We had a question that came in that probably, you know, I should have, you know, as a, you know, a good moderator, which clearly I am not, would have asked at the beginning, and that is, how do you measure productivity? Is it on queue time or is it based on recovery rate?
Yes.
I'll take that. Listen, I am absolutely convinced that KPIs and monitoring various incremental performance measurements is critical to the end result. I believe that recovery rates and actual collections are simply a byproduct by doing the right thing. And like even our incentive programs are more aligned in sending individuals to do steps A, B, C, D, and E correctly. Because if our focus is on doing those items correctly, the output or the results is going to prove automatically. So we focus a lot on utilization of our scorecards and daily scorecards for reps. But we also focus in a big way on productive time in queue, in call, and of course, wrap time. Those are really major, major items. So it's what they're saying and how much time they're utilizing on the system that's critical to us. And if we're constantly working with them, whether it's in Teams meetings or Zoom meetings to do our training, the end result of collections will improve by doing the steps that make you successful. And that's really where a lot of our focus is on.
Yeah, that's well said. And I also would echo what you mentioned there, Greg, that it's really the results are a byproduct of your KPIs. So we track a lot of different things, and you can do 16 webinars on KPIs alone. But I think what it comes down to is a couple things, how it relates to compensation. And you alluded to it there. But I think if your compensation model, look, you could be honest with yourself, if no one else, if it sucked before the pandemic, it probably didn't get better once you sent everyone home. And if it wasn't great to begin with, but your employees still love to come to work and they loved who they worked with, and you just lost that aspect of the job and all you have left is the compensation. I think that probably it's not going too far out on a limb to say that the companies that were reporting more productive employees now probably were already doing a lot of things right before the pandemic. And I would guess, without a whole lot of evidence, the companies that maybe were struggling pre-pandemic saw that exaggerated as well in terms of culture and performance and some of these other aspects that are all kind of interrelated.
Agreed.
So, Greg, do you want to talk about some of the inputs that you measure? So, at a high level.
Well, do you have a few hours? Listen, on a daily basis, utilization or productive time is critical. Wrap time is critical. Those are the two big things. I look at, and these are things I'm talking about, just collective productivity. You know, I don't look at RPC rates per collectors because they don't have anything to do with that. The machine process of the dialer and the folks in workforce management that are putting the accounts in front, they determine that on how many calls to make and timing and things of that sort. So from a KPI standpoint, you know, during the day and throughout the day, there may be three times during the day where all the numbers are popping up that basically say an in call or ready and wrap time. And those are the critical things. One thing about KPIs is if you try to measure too much, you usually accomplish nothing. So you need to focus on the two or three things that you can actually affect change to and do it in a big way. And for me, that's a combination of ready and in call or productive time, and then wrap up time. The other two, you know, the higher the better on wrap time, the lower. Those are the most critical aspects for me. And then from a productivity standpoint, from a scorecard, you know, we have scripted environments where people are supposed to meet the scripts and the proper offers and things of that sort. You know, that's kind of a separate KPIs on the skill sets that we talked about saying the right things, doing the right things, following the proper procedures. That's kind of a separate issue that you can't really attack throughout the day all the time. But those particular KPIs that you have up for the most part, that's what's got to be focused on.
Interesting.
Yeah, I think you're right to mention kind of those two subsets there. So you have the quantitative, right, the production time and wrap and maybe conversion I would throw in there, and then the qualitative being, you know, what you're saying, what you're not saying once you do get a consumer on the phone.
Yeah, no, you're right. Conversion's critical too. A lot of that has to do with those soft items and how well you're doing that, but it's definitely something that needs to be focused on. So yeah, I would add conversion to productivity time, conversion and wrap are the three things that we're really looking at. If somebody has 27 RPCs in a day and has one conversion, well, that's an indicator that you need to be working specifically with that individual.
Makes sense.
How quickly do you react to something like that when you see a change in a KPI? Is it something where you're sort of on top of it right that day, or is, I guess, you know, I'm not a lawyer, but you know, is it a lawyerly answer where it depends on the particular KPI?
Well, first of all, depends is always the right answer. that's your segue. I can speak from us personally. If it's something that is standing out as much as Greg's example there, you know, one conversion in 27 contacts, then that's got to be addressed right away. If it's something that over time, so maybe the course of a month, you kind of see it trending in one direction or the other, but not necessarily as drastic as that, then that's something for a monthly performance evaluation. It can wait, in other words, until we have more information to really back up. Is this really a trend, or did they just have an off day? You know, you can spend a whole lot of time managing things that maybe aren't even there if you're trying to do it daily.
Yeah, I would say the KPIs on a daily basis that need to be reviewed with your managers. You know, we have this great opportunity now to be able to send messages to reps right on the spot saying, you know, your rep time's too high. You know, somebody's running 18% rap time after being here half the day. Well, that's an issue and that's a problem. That's not just one particular account. That's problematic. So it's a combination of you know, getting those statistics out throughout the day, let's say 3 or 4 times a day. And then when you have deficiencies, to bring it to the attention of your management and even to the rep that's having that particular issue. There can always be a reason for it, but I don't want to wait. I want that 18% rep time to improve to below 10 by the end of the day, if possible, from an incremental standpoint. And I don't want to wait a day or two later to address it, because by that point, it's too late.
You've both talked about, you know, how surprised or how excited you've both, you know, you were at the way that you were able to sort of deploy a remote workforce in a relatively short period of time. You know, are you still pushing out new technology now? Is that something that's continual, or is it something where you're going to wait and sort of get everybody back in the office before you do something like that? How do you sort of, you know, if you've made the decision you want to roll something out, do you do it now or would you wait?
My answer to that is I don't think there's any reason to wait for any new initiatives, policy changes, and procedures. The ability to communicate now at work from home populations is very strong. We can still communicate. We can see each other, like just like on this Zoom meeting. We can communicate and probably end up communicating more often on instant messaging and things of that sort than we've done in the past. So from a change, I don't see any reason, if it's thought out properly, to be able to implement it, because we just got to start understanding that this is the wave of the future. Work from home is going to be something that continues. And, you know, so we've got to deal with it now.
I could tell you, Mike, to answer that question, directly, we have rolled out a few new things, text messaging being one of them. We weren't texting prior to, and we are now. So that is something that we are doing that we were not doing, and that we didn't. It was certainly in the works, but we weren't doing it, and we didn't we didn't stop pursuing it. You know, it's close to being fully implemented. We're done with our testing phases. We've started to do some larger batches. So that's on the one hand, we have started to use new technologies. On the other hand, we were working with a real-time speech analytics vendor right before the pandemic. And the computing power of what we had for our staff and everything else that we had to have going on with 16 windows open at one time, it isn't enough. So we knew we had to purchase new computers. So we had to put that on ice for the time being for the simple fact that we need everyone to have more computing power. We needed different resources, which we're working on currently. And then quite frankly, one of the biggest challenges we've had are the internet speeds across households, you know, the inconsistency, you know, other than having employees purchase the fastest internet they can, or at least encouraging them to, and self-policing and imposing limits on the use of the internet within their home, especially now that kids are out of school. You know, I'm not sure what we can do until everyone has, you know, a 5G hotspot or fiber optic connection, quite frankly.
Yeah, that I agree totally. That becomes an issue. Every time there's a thunderstorm in Georgia, we have a high percentage for a period of time because their cable went out or whatever for a few hours. So that's kind of, you know, something to deal with. And then, of course, you know, in our centers in Montego Bay and Monterey, you know, bandwidth is nothing like we have here, so that becomes even more of a problem to dealing with. And I don't think in those areas that bandwidth is going to be fixed anytime soon. I think in the U.S. as more and more people work from home and there's more traffic, that you might see expansion in those areas.
So do either of you have any on-premise software, or is your complete technology stack completely in the cloud? Do you have any software?
So I'll answer that question. So our collection software is on premise. We are actually building out a cloud-based collection software as we speak. So the few pieces of technology that we use that are on premise still, we're retiring them.
And we do everything off premise. So we don't have any equipment on site other than a data router.
Wow. Mike, there was a question that came in asking for more details about your texting solution. To the degree you're willing or able to share, is it one way or two way? How are you managing consents and any data you can share about customer response or how it's affected your outbound dialing?
So great question. And I like to think I'm an open book, so we'll see how well I do here. So it's all pretty new. You know, we've sent tens of thousands now, which is still pretty small sample size. We're seeing on average about 1% opt out, 10% response rate. And that does not include the callbacks, just simply they're responding to the text with a text. Ours is one way for the time being. We do not have reps responding to a consumer who responds. We're just gathering that information right now, because you can imagine it's new enough for us that some of the responses, in addition to being comical, there's a variety, right? So now you have to take all of these responses and kind of categorize them and decide what you're going to do with each category. Is it an opt-out? Okay, that's pretty straightforward. But if someone spells stop, it's simple. If someone misspells the word stop, now you got to automate that. So there's a lot of thought that you can put into it. I think that you need to put into it. As far as I think one of the aspects of the question there, and you'll have to check these off, Mike, as I go through them. But another aspect of the question was consent. So we have a lot of different clients. They don't all manage their clients the same way. So it was a challenge for us, and texting wasn't even on our radar a year ago. Who we're using is SendWrite, S-N-D, Write with an R. And their solution is much like TCN's manual intervention for calling. Well, they have manual intervention text messaging. So they have a crew, I don't know if it's in Monterey, but it's somewhere, who's actually sending these text messages on our behalf. So the consent is less of an issue because it's not automated and there is that manual intervention aspect, which is why we were warm to the idea and why we pulled the trigger on this, you know, over the past few months.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, you know, unless you have transactional texting where you're getting consent directly from the consumer, if you're using consent that your customer has already received to text, the only way I would do it would be to have a manual or clicking process like SendWrite has to reduce the risk that you might have with TCPA.
A lot of exposure there otherwise, yeah.
Sure.
Yep. Did I hit all the boxes, Mike? Is there anything I missed?
I think so. If you didn't, then I'm sure the person who
okay.
asked
that's fair.
Follow up.
If that's fair.
Anything else they wanted to learn, but I think that was very comprehensive.
And then just kind of you know, just immediate results. What we've invested in text messages, and I don't think they'll mind if I share this. Certainly, they're not sponsoring me, so it's like 12 cents a text, and we've doubled our investment so far. And we only look at results within the immediate 5 days of sending that text. So it's looking pretty promising, but there again, you know, 10,000 records isn't going to tell us as much as 1 million records will in the next year.
Mike, we got a question on the Q&A panel from Gandhi. Yeah.
Yeah. Did you have to make any changes to the team structure for the work from home agents compared to pre-pandemic on-site team, or it is exactly the same as before the pandemic?
Ours are exactly the same, and we use Microsoft, so Microsoft Teams, but that's not really the question. The question is the management structure, I think, and our management structure is the same. And actually, I'd like to promote a couple more people even during the pandemic to management positions, and that's why I was interested at the onset of this webinar what Greg had to say about training. Because although we have, you know, fast tracking for supervisors and managers, I think it's all kind of part and parcel of whether it's a new employee or whether it's someone who you're grooming for management. And so a lot of that might have to be done in-house, but we can use Zoom. We certainly do use Zoom for that as well. So I think a good blend is really where my mind's at with that. But our teams are the same.
Yeah, I would say from our perspective, our spans are actually larger. And part of the reason for that is we've been expanding in regards to placements and new products in the last 90 days. And our focus has been on bringing in new reps and that area. And it's very difficult in these times to really start looking at your bench and who's ready and things of that sort. So we have to do a better job at that. But we've been able to by using KPIs and access to information and using the technology to communicate with people, we've actually been able to handle more folks in an increased span, which is, you know, if it's sustainable, then it's terrific.
Have you had any differences in like personality types that manage a team remotely versus like someone who's like a very backslapping person who's like great in person but struggle to manage a remote team? Have you seen differences along those lines?
I mean, I you know, we're still communicating with people. We're okay. Still motivating them on calls, on feedback sessions, on team meetings. We're still doing a lot of that. Maybe not to the extent that it was prior to the pandemic, but you know, communication is the key, and that's the great thing about the technology that we have in place now is that we can still do a lot of that stuff.
Yeah, I think it's interesting you mentioned management styles because I think the backslappers, right, the opposite of laissez-faire, they just find a different way but manage ultimately the same way. They just find different avenues to pull that off, you know, so they'll have happy hour on a Thursday after hours and whoever wants to join them can join them and just doing little special things for their teams, you know, that they'd normally throw some scratch offs on their desk. Well, now they're mailing it, you know, so they're just finding creative ways to kind of be true to their own styles, but really pull off what they've always pulled off.
Yeah. I mean, we have a thing where you just meet certain KPIs. We have lunch delivered to you and your family. You know, it happens 10 or 20 times a week. And we get pictures taken and we send it out to everybody. And it just, we are evolving, okay, on how to make this even better than it is right now. And heck, it took me almost 40 years to figure out how I was going to do it up to April of this year. So got to give us some time, but there's certainly going to be a lot more of that as this whole paradigm has shifted.
A lot of Amazon gift cards going around these days.
That's right.
We'll grade everybody on a curve.
That's right.
I wanted to go back to, because both of you talked about internet speeds, and you know, I guess it never dawned on me because I don't work at a collection agency, although I do rely on the internet, but that's probably one of the biggest factors to how people are able to work remotely. So, you know, Mike, you talked a little bit about self-policing, and Greg, you talked a little bit about thunderstorms. How do you manage that, that aspect of the employees' work from home remote environment?
One day at a time, Mike, one day at a time. So, you know, part of the challenge is, like Greg said, you know, what do you do if someone's power goes out or they lose their internet connection? Do you dock them time? You know, we don't offer unpaid time. So what the heck do you do? So you got to start to make those decisions. And I think Greg said it very poignantly a moment ago, is you got to evolve. So just because you didn't offer something doesn't mean you stick your head in the sand. It means you got to get with the times, and it's out of their control. They want to be at work, right? So you kind of got to go with the flow and make those decisions as they come up and try to be consistent. You know, that's another a big aspect of this whole thing. If Susan's power goes out and she's off for half a day and it's unpaid time and she doesn't have to burn PTO, but she can if she wants, then the next time that happens, you better treat the situation the same way and document what you're doing. But yeah, it is interesting, you know, because we have individuals who work, you know, an hour or more from the office. And so from each other, we could be 2 hours apart. So completely different providers, completely different networks in a lot of cases. And certainly, you know, the internet and what they have going on at home. What if there's husband and wife and they both work from home?
Yeah.
Well, you can self-police all you want, but you both have to use the internet. So you can be mindful of your cell phones and you can be mindful of your kids live streaming all day, but there are going to be things out of their control. And I think if we take that into consideration and just kind of make some level-headed decisions and do the best we can, then we kind of figure it out as we go along.
Yeah, so Mike,
yep.
In Atlanta, there's thunderstorms in the summer every day. So it's pretty darn nerve-wracking and stressful, but it's like Mike said, it's we just got to adapt. This is all new territory for us, and we'll just get better and better at everything we do as we make improvement.
As someone who does a lot of these webinars and uses Zoom a lot for business right now, I think there's nothing scarier than when you've got a Zoom going and that little alert shows up that says your internet connection is unstable.
Hot spot, Mike. Hot spot.
See, but what you need is you need like a failover, so it just connects automatically.
Right.
That's where I fall. You know, I get the disconnect and reconnect. So that's a whole other conversation. Another question's come in. Any issues in timeliness of dispute handling, such as payment posting delays, errors, as all or most agents are now working from home? Not really terribly related to technology, but curious if anybody has anything they want to share about that process.
Somewhat related. You might be surprised by the answer, Mike. And I sit here and I read these questions. I feel like the luckiest guy in collections these days, because our timing was just, I guess, dumb luck, because we were working in January and finalized in February of this year for our letter vendor to take over our validation requests. So we received the validation from our client, PDF it, and our letter vendor mails everything for us. So we receive disputes the same way as we always have. And like I say, we're at the office every day picking up mail. So that's no different. And then certainly verbal and credit bureau and email and everything else is kind of all incoming the same way in the same time frames. And then our responses are still dependent on the turnover from our clients if we don't have access to their database already. And then as far as, you know, licking a stamp and validating it, we're using technology to do it.
Yeah, I would say because we still have administrative people that come every day into the office for picking up mail. Obviously, in dealing with regular sorts of disputes, inbounds, things of that sort, off of emails, off of texting, we have access to that and are able to do it. What I would say is there has been an increase in volume in requirements for and inquiries on credit bureau reporting and things of that sort in the last 90 days. So we're seeing that expanding dramatically. But like I said, a good portion of our admin can take the mail, which is important, right? Because that can't automatically be digitized, but we're handling that and going through it. But our volumes are up significantly, and I think a lot of that's because a lot of consumers have more time on their hands to be able to address situations.
A lot of unemployment benefits kind of end at the end of this month.
You're on mute, Mike.
Sorry, can you say that again? My internet connection hiccuped for a second.
No, I was wondering, a lot of unemployment benefits fall off at the end of this month, and then the next stimulus check isn't due for like another 6 weeks. How do you see some of those impacting your performance and productivity?
Well, I mean, from my perspective, you really have through July of this year, maybe the first couple weeks of August to really still continue to take advantage of the windfall. I don't believe that the additional federal benefits after July 31st are going to continue just by gauging some of the politics out there. I think there'll be something, but I don't think it'll be as rich. I think it'll be more focused on rewarding people to go back to work because, you know, I could use right now as we speak 50 more reps, okay, and I can't get access to them because all of our numbers from the recruiting are down because those folks that have a job are very focused on continuing with that security. And those folks that don't have a job, for a large percentage of them, they're in the heyday right now because they're receiving income that's, in many cases, significantly above what they were making. And that effect especially affects folks in a call center environment.
Yeah,
it's hard to compete if you're offering entry-level wages. But so I would say cautiously optimistic. I think Greg's right. I think you know, there's still good times ahead. And then if we do see kind of a drawdown, I think we just have to be creative in what we're paying attention to and what our reps are spending their time on.
Another question is, if the overall operational expenditures are significantly lower now, given the agents are working from home, if so, why would you look to go back to an on-site model? Are you looking to go back? Maybe you're not.
Our expenditures are not significantly lower.
Hey, Mike, you don't have to pay rent either. What I would say is there is some truth to the statement that, you know, like supplies and T&E and things of that sort. There are expenses that are going down. That's for sure. But, you know, the majority of our expenses in the organization are wage-related, telephone-related, postage-related, and they're actually going up as we're, you know, increasing our business optimization with multi-channel connections. So, you know, the fact is, this will end up being some sort of hybrid, I believe, at the end of the day. I still have 5 years left on a 7-year lease on 45,000 square feet right here. So I don't think I can get out of it. So I might as well use it somehow, some way. Even if I'm using it sparingly, it'll make me feel better. But the fact is, I think where we were is not going to continue. I think there will be some sort of a hybrid going forward in the future. And that I'm pretty sure that's where we're going.
Yeah, there's some truth to that. I mean, we're not paying for coffee anymore. I think the real benefit is for the employees who aren't, you know, buying a $15 lunch every day and driving, commuting to work and the time, right? So never mind the money, but a half hour or an hour twice a day that they're spending with their family. You know, they're having dinner sooner and enjoying their hobbies maybe more. I think those benefits can't be overlooked. I will say as well, though, that, you know, the work from home, you know, we're still, you know, paying for the office and everything else. But I think Greg's right. I think it's going to be, you know, somewhat of a hybrid. Us personally, we, you know, we're national. So there's states that won't allow employees to work from home. So that forces our hand that we're going to have an office space one way or another if we want to continue to collect in various states that, you know, haven't kind of got with the times, if you will. And right now they're kind of, there's a lot of extensions and there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of leniency. But I don't know that that's going to be the case when the dust settles. I don't see legislation changing overnight. So we'll have to have an office presence if we want to continue to collect there. And we will be a national. So
I'm curious if you would be willing to share what's on your technology roadmap, what's or for, you know, a better term, what's on your technology bucket list? You know, what's out there that you'd like to try that you haven't tried, or what are you planning on, or what would you like to roll out in the near future?
Now I need 5 hours.
Okay, done.
You know, my 2 o'clock might.
Let me go get my $15 lunch first.
listen. You know, from a technology standpoint, this business is relatively easy, right? Whether it's a phone, a dialer, whatever, and a screen, that's the only hardware you need. When we really talk about technology, it's not addressing it as a tool, but addressing the harvesting and mining of data, converting it to information, converting that information to be able to do statistical analysis, to determine a decisioning engine, to make the decisions that have the highest statistical prevalence of succeeding. And as that happens over time, it will minimize the effect of human beings on making those decisions. And those decisions will be made by statistics. So that is the way this world is going. That's the way this business is going. So what will end up happening over time is you'll see significant improvements in performance, and you'll receive significant incremental improvements that have a direct improvement in your revenues and your bottom line. And so the point I would make when I say technology is we have got an industry or a business that has enormous amounts of data, and that data has got to be converted to information. And then you have to start forcing decisions being made so humans make less of them. Because let's say humans make 80% of their decisions right. Statistically, you're probably about 95% will be right. And that difference between 80 to 15 is significant for our customers and for our own personal businesses.
And I would go back in time and I would give you one name, and that's Alan Turing. And I can tell you that if we use, you know, 70 years ago and then look 70 years into the future, I think that that's right. I think that if you can build a machine in 1950, you can't tell the difference between a human and a machine. With today's and the future's augmented reality and artificial intelligence and avatars, I mean, that's eventually where we're going to end up. I don't think you're going to be able to tell the difference, as Turing said, which is which. And I think that's where the good money is, technology-wise, is some pretty advanced technology, and it seems kind of your head in the clouds, I guess, as I'm mentioning it. But I do think that's where it's going to be, is AI.
There's a famous quote, I don't remember who it is by. It's like, any sufficiently advanced technology is indistinguishable from magic.
Right. That's right. The money just magically appears.
Well, Shantanu, as the sponsor for the webinar, I'll give you the honor of the last word before we wrap up. Is there anything else you wanted to share or add to our discussion before we close up?
Yeah, so I actually wanted to pick on just one last thing I wanted both Mike and Greg's perspective on. So technology can obviously help you automate processes. It could help you make better decisions, or it could help you do fewer things manually. Which of these do you think is where technology will shine the most? Will all the benefits come from just making decisions that a human wouldn't be able to do? Will it come from making them faster than a human is able to do, or just kind of leaving a human out of the loop? And obviously, like, it's all three, but like, which of those are you most excited about?
Well, I mean,
faster than humans, being smarter than humans.
Well, listen, humans make the technology. Okay, yeah. I mean, let's the most overused word that is out there is AI. All right, when we get into true AI, we're talking above and beyond neural networks, okay? And maybe Google and the defense industry might be using some of that. But what we're really talking about is identifying segments within data and applying a strategy that is proven with statistics that has the highest propensity to do whatever, not just to pay, but to pick up the phone. So really, it's, you know, how do I get the right person at the right time using the right channel where the message on that channel says the right thing, the right offer, okay? So we'll become a consumer-centric approach to utilizing this data to entice an individual to pay. Because at the end of the day, you know, 99.99% of collections are all voluntary. Okay, so it's taking that data information, converting it, automating it, and then of course tracking it to make adjustments. And you have to have machine learning process and algorithms in place to allow those offers and different things to change and adjust to as the data changes and adjusts, and as long as the output. So I would say it's really presenting the right offer to the right person at the right time using the right channel. That is, and end of the day, the biggest focus.
Yeah, machine learning, which is a subset of AI, and AI is augmented intelligence or artificial. But I can tell you that humans, we think we're all that in a bag of potato chips, and we're really terrible decision makers. I mean, if you read any peer-reviewed scientific journal study, we're terrible. You know, we go to the doctor and they say, you know, here's your clinical diagnosis, XYZ, I'm 90% certain. We take that as 100%.
Yeah.
And those are not the same. 90% is not 100%. And our decision-making is no different. We're just not good at it. Very few people are. And so I think if we stick with the numbers, we're gonna see that we can program machines, like Greg's saying, we're doing the programming, to make better decisions than we actually are making.
Got it. Yeah. So again, Greg and Mike, thanks so much. As Prodigal, which is building technology for the collections industry, we're very excited to hear people like you share that vision. Thanks so much. And back to you, Mike.
Thank you. Well, humans may not make good decisions, but it was a great decision to have both Greg and Mike with us today. So thank you very much, Mike. Thank you very much, Greg. Thank you very much, Shantanu and Prodigal, for sponsoring today's webinar. You were all awesome and really appreciate your participation and your support. Thank you very much.
Thanks. My pleasure. Thanks, Mike.
Bye-bye, folks. Bye-bye.
All right, everybody. Thanks for watching. Thanks for participating. Stay tuned. We've got more webinars and brainstorming sessions coming up. So, you know, check out accountsrecovery.net for all that information. And we'll talk to everybody soon. Take care.
Bye-bye.